Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Tomorrow marks a year since the school shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. Following the incident, a task force was appointed by the Speaker of the Massachusetts House to review gun regulations, and today that task force holds its final meeting. A centerpiece of the panel's recommendations is expected to limit gun access for the mentally ill, but as WBUR's Fred Bever reports, some question the value of that focus.
Mental illness by itself accounts for only 3-5% of the violent crimes in America. Multiple academic reports say other risk factors are far more indicative of violent potential, being young and male, poor, a drug addict, or even more, an alcohol abuser, and having a previous history of violence. Yet every time there's a mass shooting in the U.S., attention swings quickly to the shooter's mental health and ability to lay hands on a gun or multiple guns. The often-charged public discourse is a trial for Cambridge resident Valerie Hammond, whose 19-year-old son is bipolar.
That is just particularly the less informed media's way of finding a boogeyman.
Hammond says it is necessary to restrict access to firearms by people who are mentally ill and potentially violent. But for her, the clamor about guns and the mentally ill seems unwarranted and sometimes unbearable.
When a tragic event happens and the media throws the mentally ill under the bus, and your child is mentally ill, it's just inexpressibly painful to know that your child or loved one has just been lumped in with the most terrible, horrible crime. It makes his already difficult life that much more difficult.
Recent events such as the Newtown shootings, the Tucson shooting of Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, and the Navy Yard killings in Washington, D.C. have nonetheless given momentum to new efforts to tighten gun rules for the mentally ill. Federal law already bars firearm ownership by someone who's been committed involuntarily to a mental institution, and the law also prohibits gun ownership by someone a court has found to be mentally defective, the term in the law that some find offensive. It's one area of gun law where Massachusetts is seen as weak. State Representative David Linsky, a legislative leader on gun issues, explains that when people buy guns from a federally licensed dealer, the FBI runs their names through a federal database.
They match it up first with your criminal record, and they match it up with an existing federal database on who has been involuntarily committed or adjudicated to a mental health facility. However, that database is only as good as the data that's been submitted to it by the individual states.
Privacy laws on the books in Massachusetts since 1970 have prohibited the state's courts from sharing mental health adjudications with the feds.
Massachusetts, incredibly, is only one of seven states in the country that doesn't submit its mental health commitment data into the national database.
Linsky has submitted one of several bills that would require reporting to that federal database. Mental health advocates support that basic requirement. But Linsky wants to go further. He wants applicants for state firearms licenses, which require a sign-off by local police chiefs, to authorize police access to up to 20 years' worth of mental health records. He would require health providers to turn the records over. Based on those records, a chief could determine that someone was not suitable to own a firearm.
This is, to me, an exceedingly blunt instrument.
June Binney is a specialist in criminal justice for the Massachusetts chapter of the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill.
I don't see how it's connected at all to protecting the public, and I can definitely see how it would have a chilling effect on people seeking services they need.
The task force appointed by House Speaker Robert DeLeo in the wake of the Newtown shootings is looking at a range of models from other states. Binney says that although she shares Linsky's goals, some of the other models strike a better balance between privacy and protection. Instead of trolling through back histories for mental illness, she says, local police should focus on temporary gun removals when they determine that someone poses a threat now.
They know who has the licenses in their town. If they know there's a gun in the home, they know that they've gotten a couple of calls because a teenage kid has been drinking a lot, has been breaking stuff in the house, has been threatening their parents. It's get the gun out of the house. It seems like it's common sense. That's the kind of police discretion we totally embrace.
That kind of discretion is under consideration in Massachusetts, as are means of challenging such a decision in court. And two reports out this month by a consortium of mental health researchers support the approach. The researchers also say policy should really focus on what they term dangerousness. That means including other more telling risk factors in state and federal bars against gun ownership, convictions for violent misdemeanors, recent temporary restraining orders, and multiple DUI or drug convictions.
Our current approach, even towards people with mental illness, is both over-inclusive and under-inclusive.
Report contributor Dr. Paul Applebaum is a national expert on guns and mental health and the former chief of psychiatry at the UMass Medical School in Worcester. He points to recent research in Connecticut, which shows that the vast majority of mentally ill people there barred from federal licenses were not likely to commit violent crimes. At the same time, most of the mentally ill who were likely to commit violent crimes would not be barred from federal licensure because they'd never been committed involuntarily and so would not be picked up by the federal background check.
It sweeps up lots of people who are at no increased risk for violence and misses many people who, in fact, are likely to commit violent crimes in the future.
And when it comes to firearms and the mentally ill, Applebaum emphasizes that the biggest risk of harm isn't to others. It's suicide. In 2011, nearly 20,000 Americans killed themselves with a gun. That was twice the number of gun homicides. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Fred Bever.